This is ACC CardiaCast, a series on the latest clinical education brought to you by the American College of Cardiology.
There was one other issue we wanted to directly address about the appropriateness of LDL measurement and how reliable it is, particularly at the lower LDL levels that we're driving patients down to more recently. So Seth has done some really wonderful work in this area, so we thought we'd give you a little bit of a mini lecture on that while you're entering some more questions, and then we're going to spend the rest of the time just discussing things among the panel. So now's your opportunity, again, to vote for questions that you see in there that you want to make sure we discuss. We've addressed some of them, but we'll revisit them verbally. Or if you don't see that question in there that you desperately want answered, please go ahead and put it in now, and we'll encourage your audience mates to vote for it as well. So Seth, why don't you come on up, and we'll move ahead to the discussion of the low LDL value.
Question about direct LDL versus...
And I assume your disclosures are the same as they were last time. You got it for it. Yeah.
Thank you. Got to bring the mic down a little here.
Sorry about that.
Dr. Lloyd-Jones.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you very much. So this is a real question, you know, that comes up. I in fact, this is a real message I received in our medical chart. It said, thanks for your help with them. It seems evolocumab is doing a great job. I had a question. Is the LDL now too low? Is he on any other lipid-lowering drugs, the dose of which can be modified? 23 seems too low. What are your thoughts? So this is a question I just wanted to share that's been coming up in my clinical practice, and I'm sure it's a question you all had. It was a question when they were designing the PCSK9 trials themselves. This was from the Odyssey program. In contrast to the evolocumab program with the Fourier trial, where there was not dose adjustments at lower LDLs, in Odyssey it was specifically targeted to get between 25 and 50. 15 to 25 was considered an acceptable range, but below the target, and then less than 15 was definitely considered too low in this trial. So they attempted to maximize the number in that target range, and when things got lower, there was either a dose adjustments or discontinuation of therapy to get back up into that range. And this is certainly a concern our patients have had. This is, I don't know who else in the audience has had patients who've gone to Dr. Mercola's website. I've certainly had them in my clinic, where it's stated that impaired memory and dementia are just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to low cholesterol's impact on your brain. Majority of people worry about their cholesterol being too high and are totally clueless about the dangers of low cholesterol. So this is a real concern for our patients, and this is the type of information they may find on the internet. But this does contrast with what seems to be the experience of really a wealth of accumulation of science over the last decades, where it really does seem, as we've driven LDL cholesterol down lower and lower, that it really is just the garbage product of our lipid metabolism after your liver puts out VLDL and you convert it to IDL and then to LDL, and this is ultimately the garbage, and the body still has cholesterol to make what it needs to make. But this has been a debate, and really what we need is the clinical trial evidence. This does provide some level of reassurance, the genetic epi studies, where folks who are born with loss of function PCSK9 mutations who have lifelong low LDL are protected from coronary disease and really have not had untoward effects. Now, this is different. The caveat here is this is different than actually now driving it down with a drug in someone who wasn't born with these. So these are folks who are born with this and had lifelong low LDL. We see the top curve is those that don't have the genetic mutation. The bottom is those that do. So you see there's this leftward shift of LDL levels. And some people have LDL levels less than 50 throughout life. Now, I don't see any below 25 in this particular plot, but this does show some very low LDL protection from coronary disease without untoward effects. It gives us some sense of that long-term effects. What we have from the clinical trials is shorter-term data, and so here's the Fourier trial, and really this is the point to make here, is that the average, the median LDL here was 30 milligrams per deciliter. That means half of the people were less than that. a lot of people were less than 25, even a good bit less than 10 milligrams per deciliter for their LDL. The result was a benefit, as you are aware, in the primary combined cardiovascular endpoint. And this was found to be very safe. Here are the major safety findings from the Fourier trial, where on the left here, red there, you see the evolocumab group compared to placebo, and there was no difference in any or serious adverse effects or in other effects down the line, all the way down to things like diabetes, neurocognitive effects. So this is gives us some short-term evaluation of the safety of driving LDL very low in a lot of people. And when we were preparing for these sessions, one point that came up in the panel, and Dr. Braun pointed out, was the Ebbinghaus sub-study of Fourier as well, where there was really intensive neurocognitive testing done to assess that concern that's raised on Dr. Mercola's website and elsewhere about effect on the brain. And here, what's really interesting is it may be a little difficult to see, and I'm sorry for that, but you see the evolocumab group is stratified into the different LDL levels that were achieved. Now, of course, this is a post hoc analysis, but even in the folks that got down to LDL levels less than 25, there was no adverse signal there in terms of cognition. So this, in total, the data really have been very reassuring in this regard. So I just wanted to pause there, and sort of that's one piece of this, is the reassuring data from genetic epidemiology as well as clinical trials. And it's hard to sort of say what is too low of an LDL, but right now we have not been able to clearly find too low of an LDL from that evidence. But the even more fundamental question I just wanted to quickly get into before we move on is the question, is the LDL even that low? And this is Dr. Friedwald's work from the 1970s, where he developed the method that's traditionally been used in clinical trials and clinical practice to estimate LDL, because it takes a lot of laboratory skill, experience, cost to directly measure it using ultracentrifuge. Although there are now chemical assays that are available, those still, it's a little unclear. They're not standardized by the CDC, so some are better than others. So it's hard for, if you ask, and I think one of the questions was about direct assays in the questions, hard for me to give a blanket answer because of the differences of these assays that are out there. I don't know the one your lab is using and how well it's performing. There's been a number of papers that have raised concerns about the chemical assays, but there have been other papers that show that these chemical assays can perform quite well. So it's hard for me to say, but what I can tell you is that the gold standard method is ultracentrifugation, which is time and resource intensive, and therefore mainly a research test, not used in clinical practice for the most part. So that's what led Dr. Friedwald to develop a scalable method, and he did an incredible job with the data that they had at the time at the NIH in the 1970s. But what was a key point about those data is it was relatively small by today's standards, and the levels of LDL, there were very few people that even had an LDL less than 100, let alone less than 70 or less than 25. And Dr. Friedwald and his colleagues made it very clear in their original paper that this was not a very accurate estimate. So divide triglycerides by 5 in milligrams per deciliter, and that gives your estimate of VLDL, which you now subtract, as he shows in his equation right here, to get LDL estimated. And they were very clear, it was not very accurate, but they were okay with it because the LDL levels were not 25, they were higher, and so this was a smaller part of the equation. And here's Dr. Friedwald honored for his really impactful and cited paper, actually one of the top 100 papers of all time in the medical literature. And I had reached out to him when I started a research project around this, and he was really amazed that of all their work at the NIH that this had become the major thing. But it really powered a lot of clinical advances, and it was very appropriate for the time. However, in current clinical practice, where we now drive LDL levels down lower, what we showed in Journal of American College of Cardiology was that there is a lot of underestimation of LDL cholesterol levels using this method. And this is especially the case of, as you would imagine, if someone's triglyceride levels are elevated, what you're subtracting, and that if that is overestimated, now you underestimate LDL. And so that's what we see happening in this heat plot. We were lucky to have access to a very large data set where we were comparing this against an ultracentrifuge method. So we have published a method, and I'm just going to keep it simple and say this method, instead of dividing by 5, divides by an adjusted factor that corrects for that underestimation that's occurring. So we're lucky to have access to a big data set, and we're able to come up with this adjustable method that still uses the standard lipid profile to calculate. And this is something that's been recognized in the guidelines as an alternative to direct LDL would be to use the modified estimate. How do you do it? It's really best done, in my view, at the level of the lab where they make it an automated procedure. But we do have a free app in the App Store that you can use to do it. But I really hope you don't have to use that, because it'd be best if the labs do this at the lab level and give you the best data to make the best decisions with your patients. So I'm going to wrap things up and say there is concern for low LDL among patients, clinicians captured in trial protocols. Yet clinical evidence from genetic epidemiology and trials has been quite reassuring. Moreover, LDL is often not as low as it seems at the labs using the Friedewald equation. So look to newer methods like I've proposed. And the guidelines do also have non-HDL, so that if you're looking for that 70 cut point for LDL, 100 cut point for non-HDL, that can also be used if you're worried that you're getting an underestimated level by the Friedewald method. So thank you.
This has been the ACC CardiaCast, your latest education from the American College of Cardiology. Go to acc.org to find this and other additional resources related to today's show.